morning. It is Monday, January 28th at 9 o'clock, and we are doing a callback on the conservation workshop. We didn't quite get through everything that I think we wanted to talk about. So it looks like, all right, mic on for that cable. Great. All right. So we left off with discussing in the expenses and the CIP, discussing some items. So turning to, and I may not have marked it correctly for expenses, but I believe that we were next going to discuss the feasibility study of the McFarland Park building, the Conservation Center itself. Supervisor Sanders, I believe that's where we left off. Would you like to start with kind of a recap of your questions?
I don't remember my question. You might remember what my question was.
Why are we only
taking time to do it?
Well, it's now the time for McFarland Park. Yeah, we got a lot going on. I guess I asked, with everything we got going, can we hold off on a feasibility study for McFarland Park? I don't think we're in a position to do anything imminently with McFarland. And so I always like to put that feasibility study as close to us being able to do something as I can.
This was called for in the Conservation Board's strategic plan, and it has been for some time. And I guess we're thinking that we'd like to have, we'd like to start to have some answers now, and we are ready to go forward with this thing. And we'll be able to know what it is we're moving forward with. And so that's why it's in here.
One of the things that I've noticed since coming on the board, and I've made mention in some fashion or related to it over the last 2 years, has been about how so many of your projects went through feasibility planning, even sometimes into architectural. And then they've sat on the shelf, and so then when we go to get the bids, they're expensive. You know, they're higher because rates have gone up. And so I actually had expressed this same concern in general for everyone in the county, just not conservation, at our CIP workshop, is that I'm concerned that we are doing feasibility studies and calling in architects for initial planning. And then you go in and you look in the CIPs for down the road, and the building isn't even put in there, or the next step isn't even in the five-year CIP. And so that's something that I brought up to, like, in facilities, all right? It's just not you guys, is that how could we do something like a feasibility study or bring in architects for initial plans, and then you don't even see it on a CIP going forward. So I'm supporting Supervisor Sanders in saying we don't have the money for it. You'll hear that again later, okay? And then we're on a very tight budget this year, combined with the fact that if you really don't know what you're going to be doing, at least conceptually down the road, let alone saying here we have some plans that include getting it on the CIP with a realistic thought about getting it done and having, you know, it's funny, what's the point?
So. I can't think, since I've been on the board and I've been on, push the microphone to get in my ears, I can't think a single time we have had a feasibility study, hired an architect, and ever let it sit on the shelf. I can't think of, at least in those last 8 years, I can't think of any. So it probably doesn't apply to us in that sense, but I understand your concern from the board standpoint. We believe in rather than putting something on CIP without a feasibility study is irresponsible. So we think that doing a feasibility study, including funding and all that sort of thing, is necessary first in order to plan ahead. But we're running out of room. It's not fitting the needs that are gradually emerging. But we got to find a way to we don't want to tear it down and start over either. We want to see how we can expand. I was on the regional planning for that building back in the 80s as a citizen, and the folks asked me to sit down. So there were some things that were done to the building that I thought I opposed at the time, but I said it's a majority rule, so we do that. But one of the things that we tried to do was to build that so it's expandable in the future for growth. And so that's I think the feasibility study is a responsible use. Whether this is enough or not enough or too much, I think that's up for grabs. But that's we're trying to think 4, 5, 6, 8 years down the road in order to get there. We thought that was important.
Is it important enough to take it out of your friends of conservation?
Sure.
Is it important enough to take it out of your friends of conservation account?
Well, I can't speak for the board. That's not what was brought forward here to take it out of there. However, I feel that it's a very important item, and that I would have a conversation with the conservation board that would recommend funding it somehow, because I think it is important for those planning measures that Jim was talking about.
Yeah, so like Laura says, so when we first talked to you guys, we just had questions. Now we kind of are getting a feel of where the county's budget is. And for me right now, I'm viewing this as if we want to spend, these are general fund dollars, right? Listen.
Yeah.
If we want to spend general fund dollars, I think we need to hold off a year. And you guys make your plans to bring it back to us next year. It's just hard for me knowing where it looks like our budget's ending up to spend those dollars this year out of the general fund. I agree with Lawrence. If it's a huge priority for conservation, then let's look at finding the dollars somewhere else. You guys look at finding the dollars somewhere else. I'm going to have real trouble with $30,000 for a feasibility study, just knowing where our overall general budget is right now.
Do you have some work you've already done internally to identify needs?
I guess I would refer back to our strategic plan. In the strategic plan, it's just a 3-year plan. We're trying to, in this plan, we try to limit it because so many things are dynamic. But we just forecasted out 3 years, and we believe that ends in 21. And so, yes, I think through that we have identified some needs. One of the things in there, though, is that we do this study because we don't have the answers at the moment that we think this would be looking for from this study. So we know we're running out of room, like Jim said, and we know our programs are evolving, and so specific to this, no, we don't have those needs developed. We're hoping we get that through this process.
I would encourage you to do as much as you can internally to develop that list of needs, because what I honestly see sometimes when we go out and we do feasibility studies, we hire somebody, they get often grandiose. And I would like to more see a basic needs kind of thing developed first before we go out and ask a consultant to make it, you know, it's not their money, you know, so they get huge, grandiose kind of schemes that may be more than we need. And I also am concerned about this year's budget. So I would just suggest that if you can, if you feel the need to continue on, to move forward, that you do as much as you can internally to do maybe a needs rather than a wants list, and then see either, you know, using money from Friends of Conservation or maybe coming back to this board next year. I just think it's not a year for us to be putting that much money into yet another feasibility study. We don't know where we're going.
in PEDM Association went back, not getting far, far into the discussion because you haven't closed it yet, but there was a little mention last time about bonding for a plant bonding. And I am going to encourage you to, before you get too far down the road publicly, to really come back and talk to this board. We are considering bonding and for roads and the 911, you know, the interoperability itself. So since we're the ones who do the bonding and we're the ones that need to take a look at what we're actually charging, you know, the taxpayers on bonds, just please don't get so far ahead in a strategic plan about what you wish for and just think we'll bond for it. I'm just encouraging you on that, okay?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well understood and anticipated.
Absolutely. But let's make sure we're all really clear on what the very preliminary initial conversations are along those lines. So, as I understand, conservation would not be asking us to do anything. They'd be asking the people of Story County. And it would be a much larger bond, Loris, than what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But it would require a vote of the people of Story County to make something like that happen,
cool,
rather than asking us to try to somehow institute.
Oh, okay. Thank you for that. So that we would not be involved at all. We would not approve them taking it.
We would not approve anything. Yeah. Other than, I'm not sure what the legal mechanism is for getting something like that on the ballot.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering.
But in my feeling here is, at least, so we've seen Lynn do it, we've seen Polk do it, Johnson did it, Adams did it, and the way it has flowed through those, and I think appropriately is, it is organic through the conservation board, and then it becomes conservation board's responsibility to make the case that this is worthy of a vote. And I would believe that would reside with us. But I would hate to see us try to, in any way, insert ourselves in whatever organic conversation they're having, because we're the decision maker. If, in fact, we're the decision maker,
that's
we're the decision
my
maker.
Question, but if it's coming here, then at some point, even if we're the decision, I mean, if we are the decision makers, then I think it's good to keep open the reality that, you know, you might not have your votes there.
Just to make sure I'm understanding if I might be a new person, and I'll see how long I can keep staying being a new person and get the question. Are you saying the Conservation Commission is an independent bonding authority?
Not at all.
There's
a general obligation which they would have to, because of the amount, I assume, go to a vote on pick a time, whether it be on a, it'd be on some sort of a countywide ballot.
Okay.
That they would petition to put on the ballot, basically, in my understanding. Which he left me right when I needed this. But my understanding for something like this would be so many, they would the ballot would want to put it on, blah, 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 and how it's past 60, 40, people have to do with money.
So the final story then, the final say to put it on the ballot would be before.
Right. And so,
two mechanisms to put it on the board, I think. I believe that the Board of Supervisors can always put it on.
Right.
Simple majority vote. But I also believe that these kind of ballot measures can be even more organic than that and be forced through a petition.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what the numbers are. Generally, they're like 10% of the last general, so you're talking about 4,000-ish signatures. But I think there's more than just one way to get this on the ballot.
Okay. Thank you. So,
and then, yes, it would be part of, if it passes, then it's part of our debt service levy.
Right.
In the next salary, in the next budget that you put together, whatever that is in the future.
So the Conservation Commission doesn't take it to the voters, it takes the petition to the voters to put it on the ballot.
Or
more supervisors. I understand the board part, but how it got there. Otherwise, I didn't understand. So thank you.
And I'm not as familiar with this area of the code as I'd like to be.
She just came back.
I know. Surprise.
Good timing.
What's the question?
Bonding. General obligation bond, do you know, were the counties that have bonded for conservation, were they all put on the ballot by the Board of Supervisors? Were any of them forced by a petition drive? And what are the possibilities for something like that?
I don't know the answer to the first part of that question.
Okay.
And then the petition, usually, and not, I'm saying usually, because sometimes it's different, but it's usually 10% of the last general election is what, sometimes it's higher than that. So, several thousand signatures.
Like 25% to change, to look at a vote for the makeup of the board of supervisors.
So it could be 10, it could be 25. Yeah, it's kind of sort of the bare minimum for a GO.
Right.
Well, let me just
petition to election, but yeah, I don't know the answer. I could ask the other authors certainly.
Let me just say it's not part of our budgeting this year at all, and it's not the intention of this board. We serve at your pleasure. So it's not the intention of this board to do anything outside of that at all. So, and it's not part of this budget.
Okay.
Absolutely. But let me underscore something you just said, Jim. So you serve Story County. You serve Story County Conservation.
Right.
And I believe, so Story County has always been really, really benefited by a positive working relationship between the Board of Supervisors and the outreach. Well, that's been true for years and years and years. And working together is important to maintaining that. That said, you guys' responsibility can be a little different than our responsibility, and us finding a way to work together, even when we differ a little bit, it's not that the relationship is positive because we always agree. It's the relationship is positive because of when we disagree, how we work through.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks for that detour there, since it came up last time. So I am moving down to the page of bottom of page 82 in last.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So does that mean that we are pulling 30,000 now?
Yes.
I have a question on the 75,000 for watershed coordination and outreach.
Yes.
I think we briefly had this discussion, is that part of what conservation wants to do?
As correct.
To the overall countywide.
So this is a request to reflect the items in the implementation plan that Conservation Department is one of the responsible parties.
In essence, the 75,000 are for actual actions, not for the coordinator itself.
Correct.
So we're having that discussion hopefully tomorrow or starting it, if you've seen the agenda, okay? No idea whether or not we'll end with clear down, about deciding what to do, but we're starting that. So I already marked it in my book, and maybe I was premature in this. I thought we were going to move that $75,000 to countywide until the Board of Supervisors had made a decision about who's going to coordinate and who's going to be responsible, and then move it back where it needs to be.
If conservation is saying this is what we need to do our part, not to coordinate everything, I also still think, I understand that very well, but I also think until we know what the it is, how we're going to coordinate a county, why we can't say we're making decisions on how much each individual agency would, because we're going to have limited funds there. So,
which is why I recall.
Yeah, so we are pulling out 25 as well as 50.
Yes, just pulling it into the countywide general fund, okay, until decisions are made about who's going to do what exactly.
Okay, so that wasn't reflected in our countywide discussion that
no,
we had.
No, it was not.
No, it wasn't.
Right. Double check that. As we were, before we had the question. So I'll reflect that.
Thank you. Other questions before we move?
I want to say I'm glad that you're looking ahead at that, though. That is not, I'm not trying to be not supportive of you looking at that. I really appreciate that. It just might be at this point a little cart before the horse.
Yeah. I do go through the implementation matrix because, Jimmy pointed out, you know, how many things you were charged with. When I went through it, though, it's interesting to see how many things the board supervisors were charged with, that planning and development were charged with. So that's why having a thorough conversation, I think, worked out better for us as we move forward. Regardless of who ends up being the coordinator, you know.
Well, if our putting in the budget has precipitated the concept of the board having a conversation, we're happy. So
well, thank you for that.
We want to make sure that it happens. We don't want that watershed consistent.
Well, so we just had the conversation about spending money on plans and then letting it sit on a shelf.
No, this is just to let us catch up with you, which is the other way to put it.
So I'm equipment and machinery, and I want to know if grapple bucket attachment and a car for the director, which we absolutely need, is viable this year, so our general fund is looking pretty good. Can we figure out a way to get that done this year and take it out of next year's budget? I think we need both. I think we need both of these items. I would just like to find a way to get it done this spring rather than next year.
If you're asking us, that's a fairly straightforward purchase. So we can make it happen.
Yeah. It just means that we would have to put $31,000 into conservation. When we do our final amendments,
right,
we would need to put the extra $31 in, which would reduce our final ending fund balance for 2019.
Mm-hmm.
But it would help us in our budget for 2020. And we have the capacity. I mean, everything that we're seeing in our capacity for the general fund this year tells me that we can go find $31,000.
And this is just an operational question. Is the car exclusively reserved for the director, or do other staff use it also as a pool car?
It's a car that's used by the director. When it's needed for other purposes, it's also used for other purposes.
Okay.
But it's the majority of the time it's used by the director.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with trying to find it in fiscal year 19.
So we can take those out.
Right. Or move them anyway.
Yeah, I'm talking about just out of 20.
Got it. Okay, I'm looking at other capital projects, buildings and equipment, and I've geared in here on David's Lake Playground for $75,000 and McFarland Park Playground Equipment. It seems to me that those both are clearly things that Friends of Conservation would normally pay for, I think, and we really are very, very tight on this year's, the fiscal year 20. We're not getting a balance right now, and so things have to come out. You're not the only department that, you know, we said you got to go find $60,000 out of your budget or whatever. So I look at these two, and I. But yeah, that's what I think is, wouldn't this be Friends of Conservation money? Or wherever else you want to find it, but not the general fund.
So I appreciate that comment. There, what I would say is there's really no normal for that trust fund.
Okay.
That trust fund is most of the time used for large capital expenses, but not necessarily expenses like this. And so that's how we've been using it. But I think it's a completely germane question. And you know, something that, you know, again, we'd have to take back to the Conservation Board to decide if they want to move forward in that direction. But I completely understand the question.
So I'd like to pull them out. So that would be $129,000 that would be pulled out from the general fund. And then the Conservation Board can decide if they want to use their own fund or some access or do separate fundraising to put those in.
I think they are both items that, and I know you aren't specifically questioning the merits of those items, but I know they're both items that Dakins in particular, when we built that, we knew we had to watch where we were with funding, and we built it to built that playground that's there to accommodate more in the future because we knew it was going to be here. And I really despise seeing the prices where they are, but those are the playground prices, unfortunately. And it's discouraging that they are where they are, that they're that high, but that is the cost of making those, doing the, getting playground equipment that is certified, through the playground, safety institute. So
what are these pieces of equipment? I mean, they're more than swing sets, I can tell.
Sure. Yeah, Ryan.
Yeah. So I'll just run through both items. At McFarland Park, we did a, nature place, natural playscape, a few years back with a community foundation grant. And that's been wonderful. We've seen a lot of younger children come out, toddler through first grade age, and they really enjoy that. What we're hearing from the parents is we're not hitting that next target group, those second graders through the fifth graders. So when their young kids are there playing, the other kids want to run off. They want to sit in that congregated area. So we have a lot of school groups out there. So what we're visioning is expanding upon our existing playscape at McFarland, trying to reach that broader group so they have more of a centralized location where they can congregate and play before they go out and explore the rest of the park. So the two pieces at McFarland were climbing pieces. They were targeted for ages 5 to 12. So one of them is a canyon traverse, essentially a recycled plastic log with some rocks, and then it has a big rope web climber and then some other rocks on the opposite end, so it's a climbing piece. The second piece that was looked at there is also a climbing piece. It's a big, essentially just a big spider web lifted off the ground that kids can climb and play in, again, ages 5 to 12. So those are two items there. We are going to seek funding for those through Community Foundation grant. We're encouraged to reapply with this project in mind. So we did plan on pursuing grant funding for that. We hear the same thing up at Dakins Lake, just the kids get kind of bored of that existing playground pretty quick, and we all know that kids have different attention spans. We wanted a grandiose piece that would capture that larger age group, I guess. So that's what we're looking for there. So the Eagle's Nest is a large, essentially it's a large climbing piece that has a bunch of logs put together with a ladder on one side, and it has a rope mechanism where they can climb up top and then come down to the center of the item. I do have pictures here if you guys want to pass those around.
No, that gives you more of an idea of what you're looking at.
Yeah, and I would just say this. Mike said it, and Morris didn't directly say it, but I really believe that that's where we are. This is not a question of whether these are items that would be great and appropriate for us to put in. It is simply that in this year's budget, it's hard for us, as you look at the other items that are on this page and other pages that we've got to deal with, when we start looking at we need to find some savings, these are the items that kind of rise to the top of the list that say, maybe we can get a community foundation grant. Maybe you guys can use Friends of Conservation, but what we can't do this year is use general fund dollars for these kind of items just because we're so tight. I hope I'm not putting words in your mouth. I never took it as a question of whether these were warranted and valuable.
Right.
Just on the priority list, they don't make the cut. for this year for,
right,
for general fund.
I think that's a good summary of it. And while I understand those parents, you know, that want that first and second grade or whatever, fortunately in your situation, I mean, McFarland Park and to a little bit lesser degree, Bacon's, like, they're their own natural playgrounds. And so it seems to be, you know, we can't fund everything this year. And I think also from a citizen-wide perspective, too, that if we're limiting something that people would think are essential, okay, then they turn around and they look, but geez, they got a new playground in a tight budget year, but we cut back on some essentials. So, you know, all of it is, yeah, sounds fun, though, if I could get up.
I can feel pretty secure that you'll never be on any of this.
You can, that's right, you can bet on that. Okay, so we're going to, everybody on, we're taking them out of this year's fiscal year 20 budget, but it doesn't mean if you get funding elsewhere, it's better that you can't, you know, we can amend and put it back in. We do that for you guys all the time, you're good at grants. So, Kimmich.
I was just going to say, while you were on for a question to Lisa, while we're on 610 here, is it appropriate to discuss some of the, we've got a couple items here. Well, okay, that's just one item on 610, which is the Dakin's Lake cabin that we're anticipating the timeline of that shifting some into 20. And so is it appropriate to discuss that, moving some of the 19 money into 20 at this time?
Still there at the bottom, 610 is that account of buildings and equipment, other capital projects.
So,
yeah, so I'm gonna stop us, and I'm gonna say, my hope is, and I recognize that the schedules get way off, but my hope is that we can continue to try to push to get as much done in FY19 as we can, understanding that whatever we don't get done in 19 is going to necessarily be carried over into 20. But if we start taking things from 19 at this point and pulling them into 20, what we're really doing is we're flipping our budget back upside down. I would like us to really push hard to get, and I recognize you got weather constraints, you got all kinds of constraints, but we budgeted for it in FY19. We ought to try to get it done in FY19. And if we don't, then we'll deal with that through the amendment process. Maybe Laura and Linda feel differently than that.
Okay.
But the conversation we're getting ready to have would flip everything we just worked on for the FY20 budget, which is where we're really tight. We're not as tight in the remainder of our FY19 budget. And so I think it's incumbent on all of us to try to get as much done in 19 as we can, and then we'll figure out 20 when we know what we didn't get done in 19.
Okay.
I'm in agreement with handling it that way.
Okay.
That's everything I had marked there.
One thing you notice that we have put sewer, the Hickory Grove sewer, back in the budget. We didn't have it in last year. This is a budget that's come out of our conservation reserve account, which is money from camping receipts. And so at the moment, we've got this money available, and I guess we wanted to put it back in the budget because we are at that point where I think we really need to be a little bit more assertive with trying to make this happen to the city.
We have to get something going.
We discussed it, and I'm going to go, I'm going to contact John Wilson, the mayor of Polo, and try to arrange for a discussion, and I was going to contact you because you obviously are the a continual factor here, all right? And Marty was working on it before. And see if you and I can go meet with him or Amy, who we need, and then try to get on the February meeting, okay, for the whole city council, yes, because we are the same determinant factor you are. It either has to happen or we have to do something else.
Yeah, that's where the Avantech system comes in, and I don't know how far down the road we've gone with Plan B. But in my mind, fiscal year 2020, we got to get this handled. It doesn't make sense to put the resources into Hickory Grove that were put into both the basin and around the park and not take care of this issue. So it's time for COLO to either say, yeah, we can, and then we're good, or for us to know what Plan B looks like. And as I understand it, Plan B now looks like it would be that Advantech system, figure out how that would fit together.
Yeah, it could be determined. We had started looking at that Advantech system, and we haven't finished that. Sounds like that would be a number of smaller independent units.
Right.
Or we go with a larger within the system that then we manage and we become licensed to certify to do that. So those are the that's where we sit with those two.
If I may,
yeah.
When you're looking at the Advantech system, are there any maintenance costs that we would need to have in there to consider?
You know, probably Margaret would be better to answer that question, but I think if there are, it's going to be very minimal.
But the pumping out being like is probably minimal, but
I don't think there are any significant. But I don't know the specific answer to that.
Yeah, I would just ask that you look.
The best option is let's put the deal together with COLO.
Yeah.
But we're not in control of that.
Correct.
So I'll get with you, Mike.
Yes, okay.
Anything else that anyone would like to bring up? Thank you. I know it wasn't as exciting or as we hopeful as you would like.
I just say one thing, and since we pulled out, the $75,000 put it into the watershed, I didn't want to perhaps mischaracterize what I said last time about the $25,000 that we thought was a good faith effort. I think it would be good for the county. There's no intention at all of replacing the federal program in the state program. But I think it sends a message to our citizens that the county really cares about the clean water program. It's not a huge amount of money that any landowner is going to replace but it may be a little encouragement for landowners in our county. And I think the most important thing is it's a symbolic thing that says to our county citizens that the county really does care about water quality. And this is, we're putting money into this to go back to actual practices on the land.
Do you have any specific practices that you were looking at with that money?
Sure. Yeah. For example, buffer strips, planting buffer strips along some of our. There are places where we have nice buffers, and there are places where we have no buffers, where the plowing and land use is right up to the very edge of streams and rivers. There's things like saturated buffers, in which tile lines, instead of going directly into the stream, get put into essentially an expanded tile along the stream. It's a fairly new practice that Tom Eisenhart and Iowa State and others in Iowa State have come up with. And we've actually we're demonstrating that now it has helped too.
And
so practices like that,
yeah.
We're not talking about doing $10,000 or plus the expensive option for putting tile lines into
bioreactors.
Yeah,
bioreactors, because that'll take all the money.
Yeah, exactly. One bioreactor would take all the money. So, yeah.
So you're looking, and this is what I was, here's what I'm thinking. You're looking strategically at the practices,
right.
Not only the best practices, the ones we don't have, but you would also be looking at location.
Yes, exactly.
So you would be very specific with that money and very strategic with that money rather than just say, hey, it's out here.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's my concern right now,
yeah.
Not just with this, but with all the practices I'm seeing, is are we being strategic about them?
Well, absolutely.
And then are we looking at them really in terms of where we have the problems downstream and where we...
And in fact, we already, at one of our meetings, you deliver our minutes, we've already talked, I've talked with a researcher who's actually looking at exactly that. Where strategically you put practices on a watershed? Which practices are the best for that? So we're working with her already to determine that based on that. And then there's some of that, a little bit of that, in the report for the watershed. So.
Sure. But not a lot different than what we've done in the past.
Right.
Especially, so I think of the Hayford Grove septic systems that we had. Yeah. We didn't make an offer to every septic system in the county. We
right.
made a very targeted, specific offer
right.
that we want these practices here.
Right.
That's how I'm viewing the possibility of these houses, at least initially. Right? We got to get the low-hanging fruit, and we got to go to the place where we're going to have the most impact.
Right. Right. But you're right. I'm not talking about a county budget. You're talking about some strategic. Say to a landowner, we can help you pay the seed or something like that. So we can get a lot.
I think we've got too many shotgun approaches going on right now.
I'm sorry?
I think we've got too many shotgun approaches going on right now.
Right. Yeah, I agree. So just consider that when you think about that, have that discussion.
Yeah, so speaking of that, we did not anticipate that this money would go toward kind of the general conservation practices cost share, like cover crops. We consider that one of those shotgun approaches. It's important, and I think we need more cover crop, but let's let the state and NRCS handle those practices, and let's focus ours on, like Rick said, these low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, so I'm just going to, I don't believe we've got too many shotgun approaches out there. I think we need more shotgun approaches. I just don't believe that Story County is the one that needs to be doing the shotgun approaches. I think we need to be doing the targeting approaches. But the only way we're going to get there is through shotguns and sniper rifles and pistols and machetes and everything else.
We have the rifles.
I think you guys are probably aware, but the state just recently said that they're going to shift their WQI money into just edge-of-field practices, not on-field practices. And that's significant. And I don't know that that's the best decision. I would say it isn't. But, you know, with that in mind, that from a strategic standpoint, we have to consider that as well. Because those edge of field, as you know, are, I guess, characterized as Band-Aids versus the soil health approach.
Right.
So we have to consider that and work with the state and what they're doing.
So a little bit related to this is tomorrow, as we start the discussion during the morning board meeting. Mike, are you going to be able to be there, or will Ryan be there?
I'll be there.
Okay, super. I mean, this is how then we discuss what we formed this group, so the working group, so what's their involvement on the next step, and then as we talk about who would be taking what. Yeah, so good. I'm glad. All right, third time is a charm. We are here.
Thank you, everybody.